are listening to the Minder Podcast.
Welcome to episode 23 of the Minder Podcast in association with Minder.org. I am your host, Paul Stenning, and welcome to our two-year anniversary show. This is a celebration of being on the air for 2 years, and thank you to everybody who's written in and given positive comments on the show. I've not actually received any ag from anyone, with the exception possibly of certain agents and certain actors who are, let's say, slight divas. That's been about it. No negative comments about the show whatsoever. So thank you very much for listening and giving all the positive feedback. It's much appreciated. Hope you'll like this one. This episode is something a little different, part tribute and part inquiry. We're going to look at the very special Diana Mallin and her character of Debbie Mitchell, as well as attempt to piece together where she might be today. Some of the information I spent hours or even days trying to find, I eventually found was tucked away here and there in the Minder.org forum. I should have thought to look there first. Jonathan is always telling me to get on there. So credit here goes to a variety of sources, mostly, of course, official newspapers or magazines of the time, pulled out of the ether here and there from fans. I had a few things myself, but it was great to find some other little pieces here and there. So thanks to all who post anything on social media or the Minder Fans Forum. These pictures or interviews are great to see, especially if they weren't seen at the time. As you might imagine, piecing together a history of Diana Mallin is awkward, given she stopped acting in 1987, and there is very little about her online. I did speak to a few people who knew her, but they can only describe the person they knew in the 80s, and this was limited to Minder for the most part. Jenny Nevinson, who played Penny, of course, told me she didn't actually film together, but knew Diana a little bit socially. Jenny is obviously not recalling a lot of Bull and a Pat on the Back, where they appeared together, but not remembering the filming of the episode doesn't help us too much. Jenny did say, if Forbes Collins is still around, he was living in Eastbourne, he was a friend of Martin Campbell, and he knew her. Obviously Martin Campbell is now a big film director, even though he directed episodes of Minder, trying to track him down is a little difficult. Forbes Collins is still around, and if you are not sure who he is, take a second to look him up, you'll instantly recognise him. Now in his early 80s, I couldn't track Forbes down. He too seems to be out of the business. One thing Jenny mentioned which I thought was really interesting was that Diana was a little bit like Barbara Windsor, she remembers. I think by this she means happy-go-lucky and fun to be around, possibly a little saucy. I think we get this impression from Diana's character of Debbie Mitchell, and it's one of the reasons why she is so memorable in the programme. According to IMDb, Diana Mallin was born June the 19th, 1957. As we know with IMDb, this information might not be completely accurate, and there are reasons to suspect it is not, as we shall see later. I'm also not sure where they've got the information from, as it's not listed officially anywhere else. Although she came from a theatrical family spanning four generations of actors, musicians and jugglers, Diana studied hairdressing and beauty culture at a school in Kent. And so it was not a stretch when Debbie gave up stripping and became a hairdresser in Minder. No wonder she cuts hair so well during the episode. In fact, it was a consistent profession for Diana, who would cut and style hair in between acting jobs. And if you are wondering, she used a Kent afro comb on her own hair. In an interview, she said, "My mother encouraged me to take up another career besides acting when I was a very young girl, just in case things didn't work out for me as an actress. I went to a hair and beauty school for 6 years. The same interview also revealed that she ran a market stall every Saturday morning in Hoxton, selling t-shirts, as well as being involved in running a lunchtime theatre in King's Cross. Diana started her television acting career in 1978 with an appearance in the TV series General Hospital, but she was also a regular on theatre stages, appearing in the likes of The Servant, Look Back in Anger, and Present Laughter. Playing a wide variety of roles, Diana actually said she preferred playing old ladies. It was 1980 before she appeared on TV again, in an episode of The Gentle Touch, the first episode of Series 2, playing Jenny Burns. Tony Hoare was the writer. This will become a common theme. But soon she appeared in 3 episodes of A Sharp Intake of Breath, which starred David Jason and Richard Wilson. Diana was in episodes 4 and 5 of the programme, with her 3rd and final episode coming in Series 4. By then she was a part of Minder. In 1981 she appeared in an episode of The Chinese Detective, which just happened to be written by Ian Kennedy Martin and directed by Tom Clegg. So a nice Sweeney connection there. And Tom Clegg did of course go on to direct 4 episodes of Minder, one of which was Looking for Mickey, which Diana starred in. In the Chinese Detective episode, there were also several other actors who would appear in Minder: Paul Barber, Roger Sloman, and Larrington Walker. During her time in Minder, Diana also found other work where she wasn't exactly typecast. Instead, she was often underused, appearing as Woman on Train, or in the case of the Soft Targets episode of Play for Today, Waitress in Cafe. It was clear from her work in Minder that Diana Mallin had a lot to offer, and it must have been frustrating to appear on British television alongside Helen Mirren and Nigel Havers and only have a small part. 1982 was actually the last year Diana appeared in Minder, so let's now get to her part in the programme.
Gotta be nutters to go to that length.
Hey, 2 Rigby Road, usual destination.
Me and John were just about to go and have something to eat. Let Terry take it.
Yeah, let Terry take it.
Candy caps? 1 minute. You're new, ain't ya?
Well, no, I've been around for a few years.
Oh, I can see that. No, I meant with candy cabs.
Oh, yeah, with them, I'm as fresh as a wilted daisy. Right, where to, love?
Oh, didn't they tell you? I do this trip every day by Sunday.
Got a confession then, do you?
Hardly. I work at the Lotus Club, up west.
What, a strip joint?
I do artistic poses.
Yeah, I bet you do. So that's where we're going then, is it? The Lotus Club?
Oh, back entrance, of course.
Of course, the back entrance. Tango 64, POB.
Roger, Tango.
64, message for you. Arthur rang, said, can you meet him in the pub?
Confirm, over.
What pub?
He said you'd know which one.
Roger, Rog. Right, that's £2.40.
Call me Debbie.
All right, Debbie, it's £2.40. Here?
Disgusting.
What's disgusting about it?
You mean you obliged it? In broad daylight? In the car? In the street?
No, not in the street. In the courtyard round the back of the club.
Outrageous.
It would have been if I had.
Oh, you didn't then?
I will. I've got his number.
Hey, look, Terry, I don't pay you good money to take up with slags.
You don't pay me, period, Arthur.
Gratitude.
Oh, Altogether, she appeared in 5 episodes. Her first appearance as Debbie Mitchell was in the very first series, in the very well-rated Come In T64, Your Time Is Ticking Away. Since I published the Top 10 Episodes show, many of you have written in with your personal favourites, and this comes up often. It was written by Tony Hoare and directed by Francis McGahey. The Daily Mirror featured a striking photo of Debbie to promote the episode, and made a point of calling her the cab driver's dream girl. Here is how they described the episode. Easy rider. As sexy Debbie, the cab driver's dream, curvy Diana Malling goes to bed with Terry, Dennis Waterman, in Minder. Terry, who isn't very bright judging by the ease with which Arthur, George Cole, generally tricks him, doesn't usually get the girl. But Debbie, who never has the money for her taxi fare, isn't very hard to get, says Diana. Unlike her proficiency as a hairdresser, Diana Malling was never a stripper. However, in order to get fully into the role of Debbie, she did visit a few London strip clubs, having never done so before. Despite this understanding, she felt very nervous seeing a photo of herself outside a Soho strip club, and giving her very first performance as a stripper, she told herself it wasn't really her, she was just acting as Debbie. According to Diana, she found that many of the strippers didn't particularly enjoy looking sexy or doing their routine, and instead thought more about what they were going to have for dinner that night than trying to be a turn-on to the audience. I wonder what she was thinking about when she performed. Her next episode was A Lot of Bull and a Pat on the Back, which of course is an absolute classic and one of my all-time favourites. This was the 4th episode of Series 2, and now we really got to see Debbie doing what she was written to do, perform in the strip club. If we're honest, we could say that these scenes are actually a bit unnecessary and overlong. It was possibly a ploy to draw the viewers in at a time when there was a little uncertainty over the future of Minder. And what better way to add to this than also featuring the air hostess Terry is seeing in the same episode. This was the only episode both Debbie and Penny appeared in together, although as I mentioned, Jenny doesn't remember it. Aside from the actual capers with the bull in the countryside, which is the best part of the episode, there is a side plot featuring Debbie. Some of the girls at the strip club are being threatened, and Terry has to keep an eye out for Debbie, unsuccessfully as it turns out. Despite his willingness to jump into bed with Debbie on occasion, it is clear during this episode that he views her as more of a friend with benefits, whereas Penny is someone with whom he could see himself being a little more serious. This is the episode to really cement Diana Malling's character, as she mixes between the confident stripper and the vulnerable woman in need of protection and friendship. She also shows her view of relationships being somewhat open, not quite understanding Terry might want a real partner. The song where Debbie strips was a DeWolf Library tune written by Frank McDonald and Chris Ray that was later used in the horror film Creepshow. Diana's research of the strip clubs came in handy during this episode. If you watch, at the end of her routine, she bends down to pick up her clothes, holds them against her, and scurries off. This had been something she had observed in the Soho clubs, and was a suggestion she had made to include in the episode to make it more realistic. They went with it. Diana also found out that some of the girls were performing up to 17 shows a day at different clubs. Luckily, Minder didn't attempt to show Debbie to be so dedicated. To promote this episode, Diana sent out elaborate personalised letters pinned with a piece of lace and a pink bow.
Hold on, that might be the old bill. If they haven't got a warrant, I'll stall them, all right? Get in the bedroom. Wait, wait! Hello, Deb.
Hello, Till. Mind if I crash here for a couple of days?
What's wrong with your drum?
Landlord's on at me to do a private strip for him. He's had another key cut. I can't go back till I've changed the locks.
Yeah, well, it's not really very easy at the moment, Debbie.
Can't have a bird, have you? Oh, I don't mind. I'll keep on the floor.
No, no, it's nothing like that.
It's all right.
Hold on.
Oh.
Yeah, George, Debbie, George.
Nice to meet you.
Likewise, I'm sure.
George just popped in to mend my telly.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Just checking the aerial.
The only thing is, he's doing a bit of moonlighting from his phone, right? And, well, if anybody found out, he could get into trouble. So, if anybody asks, not that they should, but if they did, you haven't seen him, all right?
An invisible mender?
Yeah.
It's all right, Terry. I can't see a thing without my contact lenses. Oh, Mr. Daly.
Oh, hello.
Debbie.
Terry in?
No, he's gone out with... He's gone out.
With who?
No one.
Can I talk to you a minute?
What about?
Please, I don't want the whole manor to hear.
Oh, all right then.
The thing is, Terry could be in a spot of bother. The old Bill's coming round to see him.
What's he done?
No, it's not what he's done. It's what he might be going to do. Help an escaped prisoner evade the law.
There's been no escaped prisoner here, Mr. Daly. Only some bloke who was...
Who was what?
Mending the telly.
The old school tie came towards the end of the second series. Written by Jeremy Burnham and directed by James Gatwood, this is quite a gritty episode, all the more so as it features both Dave and Debbie being assaulted by the villains of the show. Good shock value there, as both characters are generally gentle and completely non-confrontational. Although Terry gets revenge on their behalf, Debbie is now shown as vulnerable as could be. Debbie was back for episode 4 of series 3, written by Tony Hoare and directed by Tom Clegg. Looking for Mickey is a really underrated episode, and perfectly made for Debbie. Aside from her by now expected striptease, she plays the very loyal, trustworthy friend to Mickey, played by John Labanowski, although it is established that they were once an item. Despite Mickey's relative stupidity and naive innocence, Debbie stands by him, and risks her own freedom in order to protect him. And during a particularly strong burst of sympathy, she invites him into bed with her. Outside of Debbie's involvement, where she beds Terry and is shown stripping once again, much to Arthur's embarrassment, this is quite a nasty episode. Featuring John Moffat as the slag Freddy Baker, there is more than a hint of the craze, with Vanda Godsell playing his interfering battle axe mother. Fun fact, John Moffat appeared in Murder on the Orient Express, not Minder on the Orient Express. He was such a perfect villain and could play creepy pretty well too. He is the perfect foil in this episode to the sly yet almost camp Bill Nye and the ultimately powerless Debbie, who does end up with retribution for her loyalty to her friend. There is also a great scene between Terry and Baker where they have a standoff in the middle of the street before being accosted by the law, Terry really showing his steel against a villain who is frightening just by his appearance. Episode 11 of Series 3, Poetic Justice in It, was again written by Tony Hoare and directed by Terry Green. Only one of Diana Mallin's Minder appearances was not written by Tony Hoare, who was her boyfriend at the time. Although it should be pointed out that in the 1982 article we have on the Minder podcast website, she is referred to as Dennis Waterman's girlfriend. Wouldn't have been too unlikely, I suppose, but that information, whether it's true, could be lost to the mists of time. Unless we can find Diana Mallin, of course. Poetic Justice is another listener favourite and features a particularly good description on Minder.org. The outline reads, "This episode is based around two different storylines for Terry and Arthur throughout. Debbie takes Terry out for a free lunch to celebrate the end of her days working as a stripper, and she informs Terry that she now has her own business, working as a hairdresser in people's homes. Meanwhile, Arthur is on jury service on one of Chisholm's receiving cases, and while Chisholm is needed in court, he is temporarily replaced by Soames. When one of Debbie's clients is violently robbed in his own home, he immediately thinks Debbie is working alongside the crooks, and Terry is questioned by Soames and Jones. Despite Terry telling Soames he was working for Arthur at the time, Soames doesn't believe Terry, and Terry takes them to Arthur's lockup. When the crooks, Roberts and Knowles, find Debbie's business card where they robbed her client, they decide to track her down and forcibly convince her that she didn't see their faces. On the run and frightened, Debbie quickly calls on Terry for help. Soames, however, believes Debbie and Terry are conspiring together to rob Debbie's customers and has little time to listen to them. Meanwhile, back in the jury room, despite the initial vote overwhelmingly favouring a guilt verdict, Arthur is quite intent on acquitting the accused, as he believes Chisholm is responsible for getting the complete contents of the lockup emptied. Under suspicion from Soames, Terry asks a favour from Dave and finally tracks down Roberts and Knowles. As for Arthur's conquest for an acquittal, a surprised jury member sadly settles this beyond all reasonable doubt. Excellent description from Minder.org there.
Good, isn't it?
Well, as long as you keep up the payments.
Come on.
Hold on. You're going to tell me what this is all about, or what?
Told you, some kind of celebration. What's the matter? Don't you want a free lunch?
Lunch is for the middle classes.
I have dinner.
Thanks ever so.
It's a pleasure, madam.
That was nice of him, wasn't it?
Sure.
What a waste.
Expect his dad thinks, huh? Yeah. Now, come on, you. You're going to tell me what this is all about.
Yep. Hang on. Giving up the stripping game. Gone into business for myself.
Deborah Mitchell, eh? Hairdresser, manicurist and facials.
All private, like. Visiting clients in their own homes. Stuck a couple of ads in the local. Got a terrific response. Great, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, beats digging ditches.
Beats having old men leering at you and all.
Did you know anything about that?
Trained for it when I left school, didn't I? I've got certificates and diplomas.
Funny, isn't it?
Oh, it is.
Well, I don't know. I've known you for so long, I can't imagine you doing anything else.
I'm not all tits and bum, you know, Terry.
No, I didn't mean that.
Guess there's quite a few things you don't know about me.
Yeah, there probably is, yeah.
Well, aren't you pleased for me?
Yeah, I think it's smashing. And that's why I'm going to buy you a meal.
No, I said my treat.
I mean it.
Macho man time, is it?
That's right, yeah. No, I'm not having you buy me meals. I'll tell you what, though. I ain't got much dough, so if you pay for it now, I'll give you the money later, all right?
Tell you what, I'll make a deal with you.
What?
I buy lunch, you take me out tonight.
All right.
Oh, don't like that one much.
That's quite good. Me?
Good seated sod.
Oh, dear, all this brandy, all this food. Might have to have a lie down this afternoon.
I'm a beautician now, you know.
As you wish, Your Honour.
You're a very attractive young lady, if I may say so.
Thank you.
I suppose all your male clients make the same observation.
Nice place you got here. You lived here long?
Yes. Yes, I suppose I have. Deborah, I don't suppose...
What, Mr. Parsons?
I mean, is this the extent of your services?
Afraid so. It's all I'm really qualified for, you see.
Oh, well, perhaps you ought to consider extending your repertoire. Like, I don't know, personal massage, that sort of thing. I'm sure it would pay well. Oh!
Sorry, Mr. Parsons, you sort of distracted me.
You sure you won't change your mind, Deborah?
Sorry, Mr. Parsons, nothing personal, but it's like I said, I'm only qualified in certain things.
But what if I were to say that...
What was that?
I don't know. You better wait here. I'll go and find out.
We mentioned Larrington Walker earlier, who had appeared in The Chinese Detective with Diana. He shows up again here as a member of the jury. And talking of jury, funnily enough, the year following her last appearance in Minder, Diana Mallin appeared in the TV series Jury in an episode titled Gerald. Once again, she was part of an extensive cast in a very minor role. Desmond McNamara also appeared in the episode, and he had himself featured in 3 Minder episodes. In 1984, Diana appeared in an episode of Hammer House of Mystery and Suspense called Black Carrion. This was a genuinely creepy premise that played out quite well, if a little over the top, where two journalists search for a rock band who had been popular 20 years ago, but have since disappeared. Quite relative to this episode, given, as far as I am concerned, Diana Mallin has disappeared, at least from public view. There are also echoes of A Star Is Gone, where Zach Zola disappears, of course. That episode was broadcast early in the same year as Black Carrion, which was released in November of 1984. If you recall, Jenny Nevinson said Forbes Collins knew Diana. Well, he appears in this Hammer House episode, as does Christopher Ellison, who featured in the Minder episode, The Sun Also Rises. Diana Mallin's current final acting credit is playing Mr. Casby's maid in 1987's Little Dorrit. This was a formidable cast with Alec Guinness and none other than Minder guests Max Wall, Ian Hogg and Derek Jacobi. It's also probably one of the longest cast lists you will ever see. A decent part for Diana to star in, but why was it her last on-screen appearance? Because after this, she went dark.
At your place? But I've already been pulled by the old bill down to him. I don't think I should get involved.
Well, I didn't know who else to ask. I mean, what am I supposed to do?
Look, Deb, if you're asking me to sling him up, forget it. I mean, apart from the fact he could break me in half, I happen to like the geezer. There's a right tasty heavyweight. Until that slag Freddie Baker started managing him. Well, I didn't even know you knew him.
Oh, it was before I met you. I was only a kid at the time myself. Two kids together. Only I grew up. Oh, I like him. I feel sorry for him. You understand?
Yeah, I understand, yeah. Listen, do you prefer doing this to the clubs?
Well, money's nearly as good. I can do two, sometimes three pubs a day. Oh, will you have a word with him, Tell?
Yeah, I'll have a word with him, yeah. But I ain't gonna ask him to give himself up.
Good reporter, but he's a ruthless bastard. Has to be to survive Fleet Street. Now you watch your step, because these guys would cross their own mother to cut a good story.
Much appreciated, John. Much appreciated.
Can we have that drink now?
Well, that's very kind of you, John. Come on.
I'll pay you back, Deb. I'll get hold of some dough somehow and I'll pay you back.
What for?
Well, food and drink. Put me up now.
I don't want any money from you, Mickey. That's always been your problem.
What?
Doing people favours. You wouldn't be in the spot you're in now if you weren't so keen on doing people favours.
Don't know what you mean.
Doesn't matter.
But I can't see nothing wrong in doing a good turn for mates.
Yeah, nice mates. Mates who buy you a drink, tell you what a terrific bloke you are, then ask you to beat someone up because it's easier than doing it themselves.
But it ain't like that.
It is like that, Mickey. And it's about time you realised it. And for what? To be one of the chaps?
Oh. Leave off, Deb.
Oh, Mickey, you're a right bloody innocent. Do you know that?
Keep it down, keep it down. We don't want the whole world to know.
I thought that's exactly what you're planning.
Oh, don't start that again. If you want to help the boy, this is the only way.
No, I don't know so much.
Look, Terry, have I achieved eminence and respect on a manor by being a mug? No, I haven't. Now, look, I've got to meet with a top journalist, number one man in Fleet Street. I don't mess with a second division, Terry, you know that.
I'll have a look, it's Cheerful Charlie.
So what was it about Debbie's character that was so memorable? Just to be clear, it wasn't just her ample assets. I think she is a genuinely likeable character. Let's think about Debbie's personality. She is loyal, good-natured, optimistic, and has a very dry sense of humour. She doesn't judge others' behaviour and takes everything as it comes. Who wouldn't want a friend like that? She only appeared in 5 episodes, but she's easily one of the most memorable female characters in the show, which is some achievement, given how many different guests appeared over the years. In fact, apart from 2 female characters in the Gary Webster years, Emma Cunningham and Lil Roughly, Diana was the female character appearing the most times in Minder. She is one ahead of Jenny Nevinson for the Dennis Waterman years. It does seem from some accounts that she was given the role courtesy of her relationship with Tony Hoare, but even if this is so, there is no doubt she made it her own, and in fact could easily have done a lot more Minder. So why did she stop? Tony Hoare went on to write many more episodes, so why was a popular character suddenly dropped from the programme? It is difficult to say, and I have heard rumours which I won't repeat here, but let's just say there may have been some personal issues. However, as we have seen, Diana did continue acting a little for several years after leaving Minder. Altogether, she had 9 acting roles on screen, with 2 series featuring multiple episodes. But after 1987, she stopped, seemingly disappeared, and has not been seen or heard of again. I have 3 updates to bring to you, which I think all relate to the real Diana Mallin. Some of you no doubt did spot via Twitter a person called Diana Mallin who registered in July of 2014. After that month and 3 tweets, however, she has not returned. Although there is no photo on the profile, there is a photo which links to Diana, and looking at the photo, it certainly does look like you might expect Diana Mallin to look in 2014. All three posts are dated in July of that year, and Diana lists herself as actress, interested in new written work and Buddhism. If you want to see the photo of Diana, head over to the Minder Podcast website for this episode. After Twitter, again, she went dark. No further posts or anything else online. There is a person continually showing up as Diana Mallin upon searches that patently is not the same person, and this only confuses matters. Talking of confusing matters, I spotted a news story at the tail end of last year, which I have to mention. On the 1st of November 2022, the Daily Mail website ran a story whose headline read, "Former child actor 34, who appeared in EastEnders and The Bill, is jailed for 4 years after repeatedly punching his mother, 71, as she lay in bed while he had restraining order against him." Ex-child actor Joshua Mallin, 34, has been jailed for beating up his elderly mother. He breached a restraining order and went to Mother Diana's North London home. Former EastEnders and Bill actor repeatedly punched the 71-year-old in her bed. He has been jailed 3 years and 8 months with a 10-year restraining order. And the story describes the following. Joshua Mallin, 34, appeared in EastEnders when he was a teenager in 2003 and The Bill in 2006. Mallin assaulted 71-year-old Diana Mallin in her home in Wood Green, North London, on 1st of March, while a restraining order was in place to protect her following previous attacks. Yesterday at the Old Bailey, Mrs. Mallin sobbed in the well of the court, as her only child was jailed for 3 years and 8 months and prevented from contacting her for a decade. Mallin has previously been convicted of 5 offences against his mother, including assault occasioning actual bodily harm in 2010 and 2020, battery in 2018 and 2020, and criminal damage in 2013. Nice guy. He has also breached a restraining order to see her on 2 previous occasions. Mallin had punched her in the head on 2 occasions in June 2020 until she decided enough was enough and called the police. He had also grabbed her hand while she was driving and pulled her thumb back several times, back on 13th of August 2017. In a victim impact statement read in court, Mallin's mother said, "The assault made me feel vulnerable. It made me worry about who is going to be on my doorstep. Before he was arrested, I was always scared of opening my front door, worried it could be him. I'm sad for both of us. It has had an impact on my mental health, and I feel scared, lonely, and sad every day." Now, this is a strange and sad story, regardless of who it is. But is this the Diana Mallin? Although there was no reference to this person's mother being an actress herself, I think it is, for several reasons. And incidentally, it's strange how the story could almost be something that would feature Debbie. Although the date of birth does not match for Diana, her sons would match, As we mentioned, Diana Mallin was supposedly born in 1957, which would mean she could not be 71 in 2022, instead she would be 65. But firstly, if Diana had only been born in 1957, it would make her younger than most of her Minder co-stars, such as Jenny Nevinson, who was born 6 years earlier. Dennis was born 9 years earlier. Also, Joshua Mallin was born in December 1987. Would it be possible that the reason Diana stopped acting in that very year was due to being pregnant with her son? There is also the fact that Joshua Mallin appeared in EastEnders alongside Dennis's daughter Hannah Waterman and other actors who had at one time been in Minder, such as Pam St. Clement, Derek Martin and Jean Brown. He also appeared in an episode of The Bill which featured Hannah Waterman. Quite a coincidence, especially given she was only in 5 episodes of the programme. It is possible, therefore, that there was some kind of way in for Diana's son that links to her own time in the acting industry. Whether she herself tried to get back into acting after her son grew up is of course not known, but her Twitter does mention she is an actress and interested in new roles. Continuing the article, it stated, Joshua Mallin was most recently working as a waiter in a hotel in Chelsea, the court heard. Prosecutor Martin Lewis said, on 1st of March this year, Mrs. Mallin received a knock on her door. She allowed her son into her home and initially he was calm. She was lying on her bed in a bit of pain from her long-standing condition, spondylitis. I think it's spondylosis. Her son started to accuse her of always lying in bed. During the conversation, an ex-partner of Diana was mentioned, someone that the defendant didn't get on with, but he found out that they were speaking again. They then discussed another friend that the defendant disapproved of. The defendant started getting very angry about her making a new friend. Out of nowhere, he started punching her several times in the face. He said, "If you don't stop seeing them, I'll kill you." It was a sustained attack. Mrs. Mallin received a bruise to her eye socket and to her knee. Charles Burton, defending, said there had been issues between Mallin and his mother, dating back to childhood. He said, he has a deep love and affection for his mother, which unfortunately has been affected by these very deep-rooted issues. He believes he has now learnt to let go of these issues. He has led within his field of film acting and the creative profession, and lived a full and industrious life. This was not gratuitous violence towards his mother. There are factors beyond his control, triggers that cause him to behave in a certain way. It is inconceivable that he would set out to visit mother with intent to harm her. He would want nothing more in the world than at some point to reconcile himself with his mother who he loves. Judge Simon Mayo, told Mallin, "The victim was your elderly mother, but this is not the first time you have used violence against her, nor the first time you had breached a restraining order that tried to protect her." And this goes on and on and on. Addressing a distraught Mrs. Mallin, he said, "I hope you understand why a lengthy prison sentence was appropriate. I know that will give rise to conflicting emotions within you as his mother. I have made a restraining order today to last for 10 years, which is designed to mean you are not at risk of being assaulted again." Mallin of Wood Green admitted assault, occasionally actual bodily harm, and breach of a restraining order. It must be said that Joshua Mallin's sentence was later reduced to 3 years by an appeal, and the judges deemed him genuinely remorseful for what had happened with his mother. By all accounts, he had some personal issues himself, and if there is an upside, it is that this is very unlikely to occur again. All in all, a very unpleasant story, which I can only hope is not involving Diana Mallin of Minder, but sadly I think it is. Where is Terry when you need him? Talking of Terry, and in an ironic twist, I did find that there was a Diane Mallin, registered roughly to the same area of London, who is a secretary at a company called Boxer World, with 2 X's. Have a guess what the company sells. It's only boxing gear. It's a very nice site too, with some great products. So I wonder, could this be our very own Debbie? According to these records, her age would be closer to the date listed on IMDb, so it does suggest it could be the Daily Mail who had her age wrong. The plot really does thicken. We've had a few ups and downs in our coverage of Diana Mallin, but that is probably accurate enough. After all, no one has a straightforward life, do they? And let's just say that we have to remember the great times Diana put on screen and wish her all the best in the future. We can honestly say that she achieved what she set out to do. Referring back to the Photoplay magazine of 1981, Diana was asked whether she wanted to be a big star. "Oh, everyone says they want to be big stars," she replied. "Me, I just want to be a little twinkle."
Oh, yeah, another drink, anyone?
Yeah, I don't
know. No, I'll tell you what, though. I've got a little dinner date later on. Terry, now, you know me, generous to a fault. If it was for something sensible like a new pair of shoes, I would gladly let you have the money. But to blow on a bird like that...
Bird like what?
Bird like who? That stripper bird, you know.
Yeah, and she's got a name, you know, Debbie.
He's only trying to get into me for 30 sovs to take her out. Tell him, Dave, will you?
Well... Now, you tell me.
All right, Terence, all right, no need for aggression. I am simply questioning the logic of you getting yourself into debt for a girl you don't need to spend money on. Dave knows what I mean, don't you, Dave?
No.
Oh.
Now, listen, you, just because she's done a bit of stripping don't mean to say she's a slag. And it don't mean she can be treated like one either, got it?
Oh, very touchy, aren't we?
Yeah.
Ain't you never heard a romance offer?
Oh, like that, is it?
No, it's not like that.
Look, Arthur, you still haven't told us about that court case.
Love to, Dave. Taking the oath, aren't I?
Oh, my God.
Mustn't discuss it with anyone outside the jury room. The fellow in the Father Christmas gear made that very clear. A man's very liberty could hang in the balance if I, or any one of those 11 other good men and true, betray that sacred trust. Geezer up for receiving clobber. Part of a lorry load. Seems like a nice boy.
Hopefully this show might reach Diana directly, and if so, of course, please, Diana, get in touch with the show directly via winchesterclub@minderpodcast.co.uk. That goes for anyone who knows Diana or knows of any information I might have missed out or got wrong here. Please let me know. And just on the subject of the website, there is an issue for some reason technically with comments. The host keeps closing comments and I cannot for some reason find a way of opening them again. So many of you have tried to leave comments, which for some reason it's not accepting. Apologies for that. And equally, when I reply to comments, for some reason it puts everything in capitals. I do not write in capitals. I am not shouting at you. I am not trying to get attention. This is simply what happens through Bluehost. I have no idea why. Like I've said, speaking to somebody in India online trying to get it fixed has basically caused me to give up on the issue. So forgive me, but if you wish to get in touch, the best way is via email. And lots of you have done this. Keep it coming. I'll read some out next episode. But to finish on a nostalgic note, in tribute to Diana Mallin, how about this? Thanks for listening.
There you go, love.
All right. Oh, aren't you coming in for a bit, Tel?
Do you want to rephrase that?
No, not really.
Well, no. No, it's a nice thought, but no, I'm a bit busy.
Yeah, I get it.
No, straight, I've got things to do.
It's all right, Till. No sweat. See you tomorrow, then, will I, down the club?
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks again, then, Till. You know, they're only glorified waitresses. They're not that much different to us.
Still, stripping's an art form that goes back a long way.
Yeah, really?
It's all a bit sad, really.
What, Debbie stripping or me helping her out?
Stripping? No, it is a constant source of curiosity to me why you choose to earn your living as you do.
I thought you only liked me because I was a nice bit of rough trade that you
don't... Start that again.
I meet a lot of interesting people.
But it's so unpredictable.
Like your arrivals and departures.